Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of this podcast. This is another bonus episode. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm going to talk a bit about how I have gotten to know other people and get mentorship as a dev influencer. So if you're listening to this, I'm just going to put it out there. Devinfluencers.com. I'm renaming all the Dev Hero stuff to Dev Influencers. So go check it out at devinfluencers.com. And that should actually take you to a place where you can apply for the accelerator. Now, beyond that, I'm also putting together a Dev Influencers podcast. That'll be up next week as I'm recording this. And you can find that at devinfluencers.com/podcast. And here's the deal. Okay, I'm just going to dive right in. So over the course of my career, I've had quite a number of mentors. And I think I talked a little bit about sort of the ability that I had to level up while I was doing Ruby Rogues. But it started a whole lot earlier than that. And I was actually talking to somebody last week about my journey into code, right? And so I'm going to summarize that really quickly because it has a bearing on what we're talking about here. So let's just dive in and talk about that for a minute. So pretty early on, I got into some forms of writing code, right? So when I was in eighth grade, I had a TI-85 calculator. And so I'd write little programs that would help me with my homework, right? I would program in the formula, and then all I had to do was plug in the numbers, right? And it would solve it, or it would graph it or whatever, right? And so I could either check my answers with it or I could get my answers with it, depending on whether or not the teacher had an issue with that. And so that was kind of my earliest programming experience. Now, I also have to say that my grandfather, who incidentally was a rocket scientist, literally, he did some work on the solid rocket boosters that they used for the space shuttle. He taught me how to solder, and he got me into electronics, which led in some ways to this insane software development career that I'm in, right? So I'm also just going to put that out there, right? So there was some tech influence going in. I was also part of the math club in junior high, and we did a little bit of Pascal programming. Mostly it was graphing. Again, it was math stuff. But I didn't really get into software. Even in high school, I took electronics classes mostly, so I was playing with hardware. And the story there essentially boils down to the most programming I did was we had an 8085 processor, and we would essentially feed in machine code instructions one at a time. Yeah, that's pretty tedious, but it was fun, right? And then we would get like different LEDs to light up and crap like that, right? Everything else we did in hardware, including the robotics. So, you know, I graduated and I went to BYU and I got into their program, and I started out as an electrical engineering major. After a while, I got to the point where I realized it would be less work and more enjoyable for me to be a computer engineering major. And at the same time, I was thinking, okay, well, I'll go work for an Intel or some other company, right, that does the kind of work that I think I want to do, and, you know, build my career around that. And so anyway, I got through that. I got a job working in IT, and I actually interned for 6 months for a company learning how to write patent applications, and figured out pretty fast that that was not the track I wanted to be on. I actually wanted to build stuff, right? But at the same time, you know, my coding classes, we were mostly building, you know, toy apps. I think the most interesting one was the AI class, where we actually built AI tanks into a simulator that, you know, we would go fight the other tank teams in our group. But it was pretty rudimentary compared to what machine learning and stuff does today. So that gives you a background. Before I graduated, I got a job at a company called Mosey. And I've talked a little bit about them in my podcast journey, right? And so when I got hired on, I was hired on as tech support. I was proficient enough with Windows and stuff to help people troubleshoot their stuff over the phone, right? And so I could actually do that. I could help people, you know, via email as well. And we got into that. And anyway, I got into code because we needed some software that would help us manage our workload, right? Because there were two of us, we were overwhelmed, it was way too much work. And that's when I realized the code was fun and useful, right? So, you know, kind of, you know, jump ahead a little bit there, but worked on that system for quite a while. Incidentally, the code name for, I did not name the system, but the code name for that system was Frat Girl. I didn't name it, but I worked on it. Anyway, true story. So the first code that I wrote that anybody worked that used to get work done was called Frat Girl. So I think there was another system in the company called Frat Boy. And, you know, it was just internal culture and an inside joke. But anyway, you kind of get the point. So I don't remember if it was Tom or somebody else that named it Frat Girl. Anyway, so we, you know, I get working on that, get into podcasting. And what was really, really interesting was that when I got started in podcasting, and you can go listen to how Chuck got into podcasting and how you can too, episode, which was a couple weeks ago. But my first interview was with Greg Pollack. And I've talked a bit about that. The thing that was interesting, though, was that as I started to move into that space, I realized after like the third or fourth time doing it that every time I emailed somebody and said, do you want to be on my podcast? The answer was always, well, yeah, right? And so, you know, my third episode was with James Edward Gray, and I'd seen him speak at a conference. And, you know, and so I got him on the show, and he had built the CSV library in Ruby. And so I just started asking him questions about the CSV library. And I figured out pretty fast that I could interview these folks about what they worked on, but I could also interview them about the things I wanted to learn. And that's when things got really, really interesting, right? So I had Rails core team members on the show. I think the one that stands out to me the most, and I don't even know where this guy's at now. I don't think he's on the Rails core team anymore, but there was a guy named Pratik, that was on the Rails core team, and he had worked on some part of Rails that I was having trouble understanding. And so I remember I emailed him and said, hey, and at the time I was trying to get any member of the Rails core team member or Rails core team I could on the show called Rails Coach. You know, so I'd had a few other people from the Rails core team. I think most of them have moved on at this point. But I reached out to him and I was like, hey, do you want to come on the show? And he's like, sure. And he's got this British accent, you know, and he's all the way across the ocean. And so we had to find a time that worked for him, that was in the morning for me, that was in the afternoon for him. And I think he was contracting with Basecamp at the time, or 37 Signals is what they were called then. And so I get him on the call. And we start chatting. And so we kind of build this rapport, right? And so we're chatting about Rails and chatting about what he's working on and chatting about what he's learning and things like that on the show, right? And then I start asking him these questions about the stuff that he built in Rails. And I think it was routes, or I can't even remember. I could probably go find it because I think the podcast episode is still up. But yeah, we just chatted, right? And so I started asking him all my questions and I got them all answered. And it was really cool. I'm just sitting there going, I'm getting free coaching, freaking free coaching, right? And the reason that it worked out was because I didn't have a huge audience. I had a few hundred people listening to me at the time, but a few hundred people was enough. And to be honest, that was enough influence to get his attention, right? And I had other members of the core team, right? And I mean, granted, this was a little bit early, and so usually now you can make the case, depending on how far up the food chain they are, and really what I think makes the difference is how often they get invited to come on something like a podcast or to speak at a conference, right? So if they're in high demand, some people are harder to get than others, right? Other folks I know will just say yes, right? So some of the bigger folks, like in the business space, there are a few people that are savvy enough to realize that the more influence or the more exposure they get, the better, right? It helps them sell their products. It helps them sell their books. It helps them reach more people. And so they'll go on anything, right? And so it's never a bad thing to reach out to a big name influencer that you want to get on the show and ask them, right? Because if they say no, they're going to say no, and then they're going to forget. Right. And so then what happens is you come back 3 to 6 months later, they're not going to remember they told you no. And so you can make a better argument, right? And so that's one of the tricks is, you know, you just follow up. But, right, so you make the better argument. Hey, you know, we've got 2,000 people that listen every week and we had so-and-so on and we'd like to put your name next to their name kind of thing, right? And yeah, you know, it makes a difference. It makes it easier to get them on. But what's interesting is that over the years, you know, I've been able to be mentored by a lot of these folks. I mean, lately, it's funny because I had this experience and I wasn't really aiming for it per se, but, and it kind of came out of an opportunity that came my way, right? So I should tell like the story of how this originated. I think I will. I am going to tell it. It's a little bit of a side tangent, but let me get to the point first and then I'll turn around and tell you a little bit of the story. So last week I had a conversation with Uncle Bob Martin. And for those of you who don't know him, you know, I think he's Uncle Bob on Twitter, but he's written a whole bunch of books, Clean Code, Clean Craftsmanship is the one that's coming out that I interviewed him about. But Clean Architecture, Clean Agile, right? He's got all these books. Anyway, so I was talking to him, it was 2 weeks ago, because last week we talked about the book list. You know, it's like, these are all the books that nobody reads anymore that everybody should be reading, right? This week, or the week before, we were talking about his Clean Craftsmanship book, right? And he walked me through like all of the practices that people should go through and then all the standards that people should adhere to and then the ethics of programming, right? And so that's the episode. But what was interesting was that, yeah, I wound up in this position where I was having these opportunities where he was actually teaching me how to write better code, right? And I've been doing this for seriously, like 10, 12 years, something like that, right? And he's like dropping these knowledge bombs right and left. And so I'm getting coached by one of the premier agile and programming coaches in the world, right? And, you know, he's doing it because he's on the show. And, you know, the show is the Clean Coders podcast. So it's branded toward the learning company that he and a few other folks are involved in. But anyway, it was just interesting, right? So with Pratik, I went to him, right? I went and I was like, hey, Pratik, you know, Rails Core, you're awesome. I read this blog post, got questions, you know, come on the show, right? And he did. With Bob, I just emailed him and said, hey, let's do another episode. And that's what we wound up talking about, right? And it turned out to be something that was very, very relevant to what I've been doing at this full-time job that I'm in. And so, you know, I get coached by Uncle Bob Martin, and I got coached by him last week too, right? And I get other people on the shows that it's like, oh, hey, blah, 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 Webpack, right? And so I learned stuff about Webpack or Webpacker or, you know, Ruby 3 was something that we recorded last week. And so you get this, the idea, right? You know, sometimes I'm getting coached by people who, you know, are at my level or maybe a little below my level, but they've done more research than I have on a topic. And so I get coached by them as they come on the shows, right? Or, you know, in the case of Uncle Bob, I get the opportunity to talk to him. And what's really fascinating to me with relation to this is that, yeah, if you're an influencer, sometimes people think, oh, well, you're, you know, you kind of get to the top of the pyramid and then you get to kind of yell down at everybody. And the reality is that if there's something that I want to learn as an influencer, I can go find the person who can teach me that and I can invite them to come and teach it to me, right? Another example, my friend Manny, right? He has a podcast about book summaries, right? So he gets book authors, right? And the last episode that he put out was with a guy who does real estate stuff, right? Real estate investing. And it sounded like he was really interested in it, that Manny was, and that he had actually gone down where this guy lives and had like gone building shopping with the guy, right? And gotten real mentorship out of it. And at the end of the day, then he interviewed him about his book, right? And so the two are not mutually exclusive. You open up opportunities to learn new things from being a dev influencer. Now, the opportunity with Bob in particular has been really interesting, both from the standpoint of the other people that he has actually brought into Clean Coders, right, to do series for Clean Coders are also people that I've been given access to, right? I've been introduced to these folks. And so I've been mentored or learned new things from them, right? So if I'm interested in like IoT, you know, we talked to James Grenning and that was awesome, right? It was really, really interesting. Or, self-directed teams, you know, and I talked to Sandro. So that's all been interesting as well. And the way that that came about, incidentally, was it was a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, I think, I was approached. In fact, it was Joe Eames from JavaScript Jabber. He was a panelist over there. He runs ngConf now. But he actually introduced me to the CEO of Clean Coders, right? Because he was talking to them about some other deal, right? And I don't even remember what he was trying to swing with them, but you know, he runs Thinkster.io. You should go check them out too. But yeah, so he introduced me. So I wind up talking to this guy. His name's Tad. He's a great guy. And we start chatting and he mentions that he would like to have a Clean Coders podcast. And I was like, well, that's cool. Right. And so, we have that conversation and then, you know, we back and forth a bit as far as like, you know, distribution rights and licensing rights and ownership and, you know, all that stuff, right? I agreed to do certain things. They agreed to do certain things. And at the end of the day, you know, we worked out this deal to do this podcast. And what's funny is this is not something that I pitched to them, right? It just came out of the, you know, them talking to Joe and Joe introducing them to me. And then, you know, we had a conversation and that's what came from it. And, you know, it's amazing how often that works out that, you know, you find these mentors, these people out there who are doing these interesting things and you turn it around and you get these other opportunities to learn more things, right? And then I take that opportunity and, you know, get introduced to people by Bob or by Tad, right? And I learn more stuff from them, right? And you know, I can go back to them and I can say, hey, it looks like you have a course on such and such a thing. Do you want to dive into that? Right. And can I get in touch with so-and-so? And sure enough, you know, works out great. So I guess my point is that a lot of people kind of have this idea of dev influencers being these people that go out and just kind of, you know, bullhorn to people. And, you know, it's all about their message going out, but you really do reap some serious benefits and learning opportunities by getting in and getting to know other experts and then having the opportunity to work with them, right? Another example of this that I see fairly often is John Papa. So John runs JavaScript, what is it? Anyway, it's the WebRush podcast now. And, you know, they would get people on and they would talk them through how they had built something or done something, right? And, you know, John is a developer evangelist at Microsoft, or at least he was last time I talked to him. It's been a few months. So, you know, it's an opportunity for him to get the word out about Microsoft stuff, but it's also an opportunity for him to pick up new things that he can go out and learn and then teach on his blog, right? And so as he does that, then he expands his influence, but he also is learning these new technologies that he can apply to whatever it is that he's working on, you know, be it a course for Pluralsight or something else, right? And so you get the idea, right? That having influence or being an influencer isn't just about the amount of content that you generate or the number of people that you impact, but a lot of times it's an opportunity for you to open some doors and keep learning, right? It's an opportunity for you to shortcut some of the process, right? Where I can go directly to the person who wrote the library or wrote the part of the library in the case of Pratik, right? And I can get specific direct help understanding it, whereas somebody else had to go do the work of actually, you know, going through the code and synthesizing the code and experimenting with the code, and maybe they missed something in the code, and so, you know, I get secondhand or indirect knowledge. And so anyway, I'm telling this mostly because, it's been interesting over the years to have the opportunities to get mentorship. And yeah, some of the mentorship was longer term, right? So usually those are the co-hosts that I have on the shows, right? You know, another example was when I was freelance, right? Initially, it was Evan, and it's been so long. Eric, Evan, and Jeff were, you know, we started the freelancer show, and they were my co-hosts on that show, right? And I was new to freelancing. I had been freelance for a grand total of like a year when we started that show. And they had helped me out beforehand, right? But they mentored me through a whole bunch of stuff. And then as time went on, you know, we had Reuven join us. And, you know, I got to benefit from his experience. And then, you know, we had other people join in, and it changed my perspective on freelancing, right? And so I started doing some things differently and started billing per week, like Curtis McHale, or doing project-based bids, you know, a la Jonathan Stark. And, you know, I got more focused on my customer and things like that. And so all of these things kind of played together again to get me the kind of mentorship I needed to be able to succeed in business, right? And it goes on and on and on and on. So if you are looking for opportunities to continue to learn as a developer and continue to move up in not just influence, but in your career, then, you know, being an influencer makes a big difference. Now, how do you do that, right? I mean, that's the rest of the conversation is, okay, how do you do that? Like, what are the steps? What are the things that you need to do? And I have a dev influencer outline that I use in the accelerator. And I basically walk you through the process of identifying the people that you want to build influence with, right? So sometimes it's a development community or people that use a particular technology. Other times it's people who would be good customers for whatever it is you're going to put out, you know, be it a SaaS or courses or things like that. Right. And so you identify them, and then you get their attention by understanding what they want and then providing them with a podcast. And the reason that I've chosen podcasting, I have people ask, you know, well, what about YouTube? And what about blogging? So here are the trade-offs, right? So blogs, the problem is that the way you get traction on a blog is you either get somebody with influence to share it on a regular basis, right? So people keep coming back. I just don't see people subscribing to blogs via RSS anymore, right? So the only way that people keep coming back is if, you know, they're deliberate about somehow bookmarking your content and then going back to it over and over and over again, right? Whereas a podcast, when you subscribe, it shows up every week, right? You ready or not, here it is, right? And so it shows up in your feed like this did, right? The other way that I see people building influence is through YouTube, right? And the problem with YouTube is that it's kind of like the problem with the blogs, you know, where you have to have people sharing it, because SEO is essentially what you wind up doing for both blogs and for YouTube, right? So you play the algorithm game, you get noticed, right? Hopefully you get people to link. You can get people to subscribe to you on YouTube, but they have to keep going back to YouTube to get your content, right? And so that's the rub there, is that they may subscribe, and then if they don't get back on YouTube, then you've lost them, okay? With podcasts, it's a little bit different. Podcasts operate, so blogs and YouTube, the other thing that I'm talking about here is when you're doing SEO, you're doing SEO, yes, for your entire channel or website, but mostly for your individual videos or blog posts, okay? And so you're trying to drive people back to those over and over and over again. And that's not to say that it won't work, and you're probably going to have a couple of videos or a couple of blog posts that continue to get you traffic, right? And the same is kind of true for podcasts, but podcasts kind of get promoted as a package deal, right? And so people don't get on Apple Podcasts or get on their podcast app and just go check out one episode of Ruby Rogues or one episode of JavaScript Jabber. The way that that works is they actually subscribe to the podcast, and then they may go pick and choose the episodes that they want to pick up on their way through, right? But while they're subscribed, then they get a new one every week, right? Or however often you release. And so what winds up happening is that it's an automatic bring people back, and they hear your voice over and over again. So that's a major, major thing, right? As compared to blogs or YouTube. The other thing that you get from the podcast, though, is that the podcast searches are not as sophisticated as the YouTube search or the search engine that you're using to look for blog posts, right? Instead, especially Apple, Apple's the one that gets the most traffic and is the one that people tend to, you know, to search from, right? And so that's the one, I mean, seriously, it's like 60 or 70% of the market, right? And then the rest of it's Spotify, right? But again, Spotify is mostly music, and I do not think they search the lyrics. They might, but for the most part, especially with the spoken word, all they have is the text that you put in to go on, okay? And by far the most important thing is the title, right? So you have the title of the podcast and you have the title of the episodes. And I mean, that's pretty much it. They really don't look at the description. They don't look at much else other than the category that you put your episode or your podcast in. And then only the first category you put the podcast in, right? The rest of the information is basically informational when people actually click on your show, right? And so, and you get ranked and rated based on people's ratings and, you know, how many people click through and subscribe. But at the end of the day, that's pretty much the long and the short of getting found as a podcast. The rest of it's word of mouth, right? Just like the rest of it. Anyway, so that's why podcasts work, is because you get the repeated exposure, and because getting found, you just have to make sure that, you know, your core audience can find you by searching for what they're searching for in a podcast app. And that's it, right? That's as sophisticated as it gets. And, you know, that may change as we get better at indexing audio. But for right now, there really isn't a great way to do it. You know, automated transcripts just aren't good enough. Honestly, they're just not yet. And so, you know, they kind of go off of what they can, but mostly that's just the text you submit. Also, the keyword field, if you submit to iTunes, it's misleading because they don't actually search by keywords either. So at the end of the day, what winds up happening is you name your show, I'm for Ruby developers, right? Ruby Rose. I'm for JavaScript developers, JavaScript Jabber. And, you know, you give it a little bit of a tagline, and, you know, that's how you get found. And so at the end of the day, with what you're looking for, essentially that's the way that works out. And so you're much easier to find. And like I said, people automatically get pushed to come back to you over and over and over again. And so because of those two things, podcasts are the way to build influence. And then, you know, the framework kind of walks you from building your podcast to building your podcast audience. So we show you how to reach out to other people and, you know, essentially connect with them to build your audience. We show you how to show up in various places online. We give you the strategies to promote your shows on social media and stuff, which, to be honest, isn't a great source, but it does make it more shareable. And for the people who show up on your show, the people who care about where those people show up, that's where you start to garner some of those listeners, right? Because it's, oh, I love everything that so-and-so does, and now they're on this other show, so I'm going to go check it out. You know, we'll teach you how to build your email list. We'll teach you how to get people in there. And then usually people have some kind of outcome. And so we'll also teach you how to essentially sell the outcome that you're looking for, right? So be it courses or be it freelancing, or, you know, maybe you just want to build influence, you know, and be a speaker, right? So we'll talk about that and how to work with the conferences so that they're going to want to have you speak. And that's the framework that we're going to be working with there, right? And again, you can use your podcast as an opportunity to find mentors to help you do all this stuff. You can also use our proven method to do it, but that's what the dev influencers stuff is all about, right? That's what the accelerator does. And so if you're interested in the accelerator, you can go check it out. It's at devinfluencers.com. And if you want to join, it's devinfluencers.com/apply. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to helping more people level up their level of influence so that they can reach the people that they feel like they can help. And at the same time, build sort of that next level of career after senior and continue their learning journey and not get stuck or stagnated because you're not doing interesting stuff at work or things like that. So like I said before, devinfluencers.com is the place you can go check that out. And, you know, podcast episodes should start dropping next week. And so you can go find those at devinfluencers.com/podcast.